Case number 07-7129, Dominic Novak versus Capital Management and Development Corporation, et al., appellants, SJG Properties, et al. Mr. Hoffman for the appellants, Mr. Regan for the appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Before you begin, let me just say to both parties that we have your motion to dismiss the cross-claim, and that is under advisement.
Very good, Your Honor. I've been asked to advise the court that we're not going to reserve a rebuttal at this point. I'm going to use the time right now. As you know, this case involves the criminal acts of third parties, and that's not a novel issue before this court by any means. What's unique about this case?
Just on that one, on the jurisdictional point, just for a minute.
So yes, Your Honor.
Do both sides agree then, I take it because it's a consent motion, that the cross defendants, I guess they are, should be dismissed from the case?
Without prejudice, that's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Without prejudice in the sense you could bring a separate lawsuit?
If necessary, correct.
Yeah. And both sides agree that if we, understanding that your agreement doesn't necessarily resolve the question, but both sides agree that their view of the law is that we can do this, and that we have jurisdiction to do this, and that if we do this, do it, we've created a final judgment below, and that we then have jurisdiction to go on to consider what you're about to talk to us about, namely the merits. Is that right?
Absolutely, unless, okay.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
How do we have jurisdiction to dismiss claims when we don't have jurisdiction over the appeal unless we do that?
In fact, this court's done it before in this very case, and what we've been calling Novak 1, the first appeal under Rule 21, this court has the power to dismiss parties, even though it's already on appeal, as long as it doesn't destroy diversity jurisdiction or the original jurisdiction of the court. And in fact, in this very case, it was done before.
Yeah, but the court had jurisdiction before. If we don't have jurisdiction now, there's a rule that we can take that sort of action as long as we don't destroy our jurisdiction. But my question is, we don't have jurisdiction now. We clearly don't. This is not a final judgment. You agree with that because
yes,
you filed a motion to that effect.
Yes.
So at this very moment, while you're standing there, we don't have jurisdiction over your...
I would have to say and that's what the relief request is, that the motion be granted first to secure this court's undisputed jurisdiction so we could proceed today with the merits.
If we don't have jurisdiction to hear the appeal.
Well, the court has jurisdiction to receive and rule on the motion to dismiss the cross-claims, and once granted, then it's undisputedly a final judgment.
And we can rule on it. I agree with
correct.
You.
Correct.
And the ruling is denied. We have no jurisdiction.
If Your Honor deny the consent motion to dismiss the cross-claims, then there would not be jurisdiction to hear the appeal.
And all you'd have to do is go back to the district court and either get a Rule 54B certificate or go back and file the consent motion, have it dismissed, and then appeal.
And we'd be back here.
Right.
And the reason we did it this way is, of course, because the case has already been briefed, all the expenses have been incurred, as it were, and it's a consent motion.
Oh, you can make your argument and come back to this panel and you don't have to rebrief it.
We wouldn't have to refile the briefs, correct. All the work is done, and since this court already ordered today's hearing on the merits, we thought this was the most economic way and convenient way to dispose of the issue, to file the motion, the consent motion.
How about your motion to remand?
That would be rendered moot as long as the cross-claims are dismissed.
Have you withdrawn it?
We would withdraw it. We can't withdraw it yet, you see. We can't withdraw it until the consent motion is granted. And then we would happily withdraw it or be moot by its own accord. Let me, with my time remaining, I want to jump right into substantial special use. And what I'd like to do is make a point about the three cases which this court raised in Novak 1. The doctrine was developed in three trip and fall cases, the Vion case, the Merriam case, the Quigley Pharmacy case. And, of course, this is not a trip and fall. This is an intentional criminal act by third parties. But first, the Vion's case, the court held that the that a jury instruction should have been given with respect to substantial special use. And that Vian's court went so far as to, as to craft its own jury instruction on the issue of substantial special use, and in its opinion, it recommended that the lower court should have given this instruction or an instruction similar. And that instruction dealt with exit doorways, paths from exit doors, to use the court's language, and advised the jury of the duty of the store with respect to the area of egress outside the exit door, which is not owned by the Safeway. So we submit that the Vian's case requires that the trial court give some instruction to the jury as to substantial special use. And the duty of the property owner with respect to any property subject to substantial special use, just to the as they did in Vian's. They did not do that in this case. There was zero instruction on substantial special use.
So the one you submitted just listed those three cases, didn't it? I mean, it did talk about substantial control.
I'm sorry.
The charge you submitted. I can't find it now.
Is number three, your proposed jury instruction number three?
Yes. Now, we at least asked that the court, and so did all parties in this case, submitted jury instructions requesting that the court give some instruction.
Supplemental jury instruction number one.
Yes.
In which you said you discussed both the foreseeable dangers, the duty to protect its patrons against that. You talked about for their own private substantial special use and possessed or exercised substantial control, and then listed the three cases.
And correct. And the appellee did the same thing, or similar proposed instruction. So there was an agreement that the jury needs some sort of guideline. If they're to determine facts to establish substantial special use, they need some instruction that it's their that they have to engage in fact-finding on that issue. And here there was no instruction that they engage in any fact-finding on substantial special use. There was no definition of the concept, and there was no description of a duty of the defendant to property that it doesn't own. So they were completely oblivious as to this requirement. And I'd like to make two more points about the two other cases. The Miriam case held that substantial special use only applies if the property owner takes dominion over the public property and makes private use of it, and that the danger to the plaintiff, that is that the danger to the plaintiff had to have been caused by the defendant's use of that property, private use of the property, quote, as distinguished from the use to which they're entitled as members of the public. So you have to separate the use just as a public sidewalk and the use of the defendant. Now, in our case, there is zero evidence that the individuals who attacked Mr. Novak were ever inside the Z Club, ever entered the Z Club, ever exited the Z Club, or ever invitees of the Z Club. The only evidence is that they were passerbys using I Street Alley as general members of the public. That's the only evidence. And therefore, substantial special use cannot apply in this case. And in Quigley, there's an additional standard for substantial special use to apply. Quigley held that the plaintiff must be attracted to the area in which he was hurt because of the defendant's substantial special use. And in that case, the plaintiff tripped on her way to the mailbox, had nothing, it had happened to be in front of the defendant's store, and so there's no substantial special use here.
Are you arguing on this question of there being no substantial use, leaving aside the instruction issue?
Right. Now, this is a tangential issue, correct, that there can't be substantial special use under the very cases cited by this court.
But is that inconsistent with our panel's previous decision in this case?
Well, the court did not come to a decision previously. The court said it's a jury.
Right, but it said that if the facts were as described in the affidavits, summary judgment affidavits and depositions, a reasonable jury could conclude that
they could conclude it, but there are elements of substantial special use that render the doctrine inapplicable to this case.
No, I understand your instructions issue. That's a separate one. But on the substance, is there some fact that was described in our previous panel's opinion that didn't get before the jury? In other words, it seems like on the ultimate question, whether a reasonable jury could find substantial special use, we're stuck with the previous panel's decision unless the evidence that actually came in was different than the evidence that was available at summary judgment. Am I wrong about that?
Well, kind of, because the jury was never asked to find substantial special use.
That's a substance question. That's, okay. That's an instructions question. You moved from instructions to substance.
Okay. Here's what I would say. This court in Novak 1 did not deal with the issues I'm raising now. It cited Vyons, it cited Quigley, it cited Miriam, but did not apply the holdings in that to the facts of this case. And that, by example, I want to finish my thought on Quigley. The plaintiff had to have been attracted to the spot where he was hurt because of the defendant's control over that property. In our case, the facts are Mr. Novak had left the Z Club, had already walked down I Street Alley, had left the exit area, turned around, saw Mr. Henderson in danger, and decided to run back down I Street Alley to save him. And he jumped into the middle of this ongoing brawl in an attempt to render aid. Now,
that's disputed, isn't it?
It was not disputed.
I thought the sister said he was no more than 7 feet away and we were all together. And
so. No, in fact, I believe we put in our brief that the sister said she had no idea where Mr. Novak was at the time of the attack. And as we also
and
put...
what did she testify to?
She testified she did not know where Mr. Novak was at the time that Mr. Henderson was attacked.
Then what did she testify to with respect to 7 feet away?
That's where Mr. Henderson was attacked, but not where Mr. Novak was attacked. Mr. Novak was way down the alley, turned around and ran back. And even plaintiff's counsel in closing said, as we put in our brief, that he's proud of Mr. Novak for running back to help his friend. So we would say they're to stop from trying to say that's a disputed fact. But the second Mr. Novak turned around and ran back towards the exit, he was on his own business. He was not attracted to that area because of the Z Club. He made his own conscious decision that I'm going to voluntarily assume this risk. I'm going to go help my friend. The Z Club did not attract him to that spot. He attracted himself, and he was on his own business. And so under Quigley, you don't have substantial special use either.
Let me ask you two questions, actually. Was there any evidence that the door to this club was locked once you left it?
As a security issue, I believe the appellee put on evidence that once the door closed, they believed they couldn't be opened from the outside. As a security issue, of course, the Z Club doesn't want people coming in the exit with alcohol and without showing ID, etc.
Okay, the other question I had, the exhibit showing this layout in the joint appendix, the drawing has, it looks like, another area. There's the I Street Alley, the Zay Alley, and then there's a space between the actual back door and the next building. Is that correct?
Well, these are alleys, so the only space that I'm familiar with are the alleys themselves. As far as an intersection of the two alleys.
All right. Do you have A 3001?
I have to come over.
Which volume is it? You know which volume?
Okay, I'm looking at A3.
Wait till we all have it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's A3001. All right, see where that arrow says back door?
Back door, yes.
All right, now I assume that little drawing next to it is the dumpster to the left of it.
With a D on it?
Yeah.
It may be. I'm not sure the record is clear.
Okay.
That's
all I'm
what that
asking
is.
About is that distance between the back door and the thing marked building. Is that another alley, or is there a wall to the left of it? Or
that? Oh, I see. That is the words back door.
Yes.
There's I Street Alley, Z Alley.
The I Alley
yeah.
is at 11 by 35 or 46, right?
I Street Alley is the one going up and down on this page. The
heading
one
north. Okay.
That's an alley is the answer. I'm not sure if that's designated I Street Alley, but that's Blacktop. That is, there's definitely, of course, a space between the back door and the next.
Distance between that, okay.
And the building.
All right, where were the assailants?
The testimony was that they were in I Street Alley, that is the, going up and, you know, north to south, along the wall, closer to the exit than the entrance. The front door, of course,
okay,
is.
Okay, not the wall directly across from the back.
No, the wall in I Street Alley, definitely in I Street Alley.
Right.
That was, I believe, clearly the testimony.
Right. Okay.
There are two, on the next page, there are two exits. Or two exit doors, right? One opens into the I Street Alley, and the other opens into the area near the dumpster.
I believe my understanding is that there might be two doors because this is kind of a blueprint, but that only one door was being used. The other one might be a fire door. I'm not really sure on that.
It's being used, the one that opened into the alley.
The one at the very top, I believe on the top of the page, which is basically at the corner there. But again, as your honors could see from the testimony of even plaintiff's expert, that substantial special use, they have to define the area. It can't be the entire alley. There's other businesses in this alley. It's not going to be the entire public street is under the substantial special use of the Z Club, or at least the jury has to determine that. And they certainly had no expert testimony to guide them. In fact, plaintiff's expert himself admitted he has no idea how long a means of egress extends from any business. I believe we were using the Verizon Center as an example. How far is the business's duty extend to a patron who leaves the business? And he couldn't answer those questions, and he certainly didn't answer it with respect to the Z Club. So I don't think that we can sit here and assume that without a jury deliberating that issue, that the Z Club made substantial special use of any part of the I Street Alley, much less the entire I Street Alley, regardless of how many feet are between exit doors, et cetera.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
A couple minutes in reply. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Patrick Regan, and I represent Mr. Novak. Mr. Hoffman was not trial counsel, so if you will allow me, I will straighten out the geography.
Which one? Are you referring to the one on 3001?
3001. That was prepared by the U.S. Attorney's Office in connection with the criminal prosecution. Whether it was used or not, I don't know, but it's inaccurate. It's inaccurate.
All right.
As Judge Randolph pointed out, when you look at 3002, if you look at the top of the page, you'll see the word exit. That is the door that is directly a quarter of an inch below that. That is the door that was used to exit the facility. And to the right, you'll see the entrance. The patrons were allowed in the front door here. And by the way, they lined up the where they had their velvet ropes. Okay, where they had the velvet ropes for the entrance before they collected the cover charge was in that area between the entrance and exit. So as you look across the top of this page, you'll see that it says handicapped elevator coat check. It's in that wall of the exterior that they lined up waiting to get in. And then when they exited, they came out that door.
We can't see what you're pointing at.
I'm talking about the one just below the word exit.
Uh-huh.
Can you hold that up for
just
me?
Below or just equal to the word exit? You're looking at 3002?
Yes, I'm looking at 3002.
Uh-huh.
And
I have like these, looks like a door, which is on the same level as exit.
Right. At the top here it says exit. This is the door that you see right here. This is where they exit.
So that's in the eye alley, you're saying?
That's correct.
Yes.
And then the issue of substantial special use also comes in because they were using that area between entrance and exit on the exterior.
So if you hold this thing so that the word Zai is, no, the other way. Yeah.
Only this way.
Yeah. The thing that's pointing up at the top, that sort of what Judge Randolph noted was a second exit, that wasn't there. Or that's not where people.
That's a fire door. It's not used. It was never used. It was. I don't think you could even. I think it was actually
locked. I don't think you could even use it as a fire door. But it was not used for the patrons.
Okay.
And where do they line up again?
They lined up in this area.
To get into the front door?
Correct.
All right.
Right here. But now, somebody asked where the assailants were. If you see the word T on the word exit, and now flip to the page before, and I'm going to hold this up for you. I put red X's on this mark. That's the wall the assailants were lined up
there.
Okay. So on page 3001, it's one above 11, if you will, sideways, looking 11 sideways.
To the right.
Huh?
To the right
of 11, right. 11 stands for the feet. So basically the distance from myself to the court. But on page 3002, it would be roughly where the word where the letter T is in exit, and then it would go across the page horizontally. That wall is not depicted there, of course, but that's where they were. Now, a couple of points. Both those doors were locked, by the way. When you go out the exit door that locked behind you, this entrance door, which is where Mr. Novak was actually brutally assaulted with the 2x6s, was also locked. People were trying to get in that way to get him help. This entire attack took 5 minutes before the police officers from inside the club got outside. And so one of the...
Say that again. You mean Novak was attacked at the front door?
No, he was dragged and beaten, but he was hit with the 2x6s, where he was hit, you know, and this all occurred at the very end of the assault, because the dumpster, you were correct, Your Honor, where you said D, that does stand for dumpster. The 2x6s were not involved for the first few minutes. They only got involved at the end, and where the real injuries occurred, the life-threatening injuries, were right by that open door to the left of the E in entrance. Now, those doors were locked. People were banging on the doors, trying to get in. His sister was trying to bang on. They tried to bang on the back door. And this went on.
So that's 35 feet from the exit?
Well, isn't it marked on here?
So I understand the location. The beating was where the E in entrance on page 3002, that's what you're talking
about? Sort of, yeah, a little bit northwest of there on this chart. You know, if you just use this chart as a northerly, if we just assume it's
northwest gets you almost inside.
Okay, well, it's I'll mark it. And there were photographs that were introduced showing where the 2x6s were and everything. It's on page 3002, right where this red X is here, is where Mr. Novak was assaulted with the 2x6s. So it's...
Wait, can I see that again? I don't have that page. Is that the back door or the front door? It's the front
That's
door.
The front
door. All right, so my question is, he comes out an exit, it's 35 feet away, and he's assaulted... Or he's dragged 35 feet?
Oh, this went on for 5 minutes, Your Honor. It went on for 5 minutes. And that was the estimate of everyone, including the police officers. I mean, so during the course of the 5 minutes, he's dragged. I mean, there were they estimated a dozen thugs who were involved in this assault on the two guys. And the sister and the girlfriend were... who ultimately became his wife.
Where was Henderson assaulted? I thought he was at the back door.
He was assaulted within 5 feet of the door. So if you see that word exit, they came out and they proceeded to walk to their right, which would be towards the entrance. Frank West testified to all that, and this is all discussed on page 8 of our brief. And while I mentioned that, by the way, there was a statement made that these thugs were never in the Z Club. That's not true. Ann Nguyen testified at the civil trial and at the criminal trial that she saw two of the three assailants who were convicted, two of them inside the Z Club that evening. So they were clearly patrons. And these were, you know, we were criticized for calling an Asian gang, even though that's what all the witnesses described and everything else. They were all dressed alike, wearing a uniform, if you will, of their, you know, gang, and I mean, I don't profess to be an expert on these things, but they're all dressed identically, and they were lined up against that wall. And as they came out, they walked out and turned to their right, and
Mr. Henderson was attacked within 5 feet of the door. And that was the first attack. And then the record is clear where the witnesses said that Mr. Novak was. And he was just a few feet ahead of him. He was walked out ahead of him. They all walked out together. And the women were coming out the door at the time the assault attacked. That door closed. And then this assault went on for 5 minutes. Well, they tried to get in the exit door first, knocking on that door. They tried to get in the front door, knocking on that door. And finally, after 5 minutes, the police officers came out. And at that point, they had begun beating Mr. Novak with the 2x6s. And the police officers drew their weapons, and they stopped.
Was there any evidence of people coming out before as to how long these assailants were?
No, we didn't. The people who came out before, Your Honor, were gone. They came out and went. The interesting thing about this club, and
I thought these security guards were involved in kicking some people out.
Kicking some people out.
Right. Were they kicking him out the back door or the front door?
You know, I don't know. The front door closed at some point. It could be open from the inside. So they certainly could have kicked him out that way. I think they kicked him out the rear side. I believe there was testimony that they put him out there. But the record...
There's no evidence that when they kicked these people out, whether they were in the front or the back, that there were 12 or 15 people lined up in uniforms.
There was no testimony one way or another. In fact, the testimony from the police officers was all across the board as to when they were in the alley, whether they were supposed to be in the alley. I mean, this case was defended, interestingly enough, on the fact that they weren't supposed to be in the alley. Now, there was abundant evidence from Z Club former employees. I mean, we had to dig and scrape, and you're probably wondering where was Lieutenant Saunders when we stood here before you before? And the reason was that a lot of these people, I don't want to say they were hidden, but we had to discover, and by all means, this is not directed to the very fine gentlemen who are on appellate counsel. The trial counsel, as the court I'm sure is aware, engaged in just a unique view of discovery. And in fact, ultimately the court entered a $35,000 sanction order for violations of multiple court orders, failure to comply. But the point is, Lieutenant Sanders surfaced after because of continuing motions to compel that we had to file to find out employees' names. And he'd worked there 5 years, and they never told us about him. And yet he describes identical crimes where people are assaulted by gang members taking stuff out of the dumpster. I mean, this is, same exact type of assault.
All right. You're over your time.
Yeah, may I ask you?
Sure.
Where is it that the court... in the instructions defines what substantial special use is?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to address that. Your Honor, as you see in the brief, the defendants, appellants, make a big deal out of the fact that the court didn't define it, but they never asked them to. Even in their instruction, they don't ask for a definition. It's only on appeal that they said...
No objection that was raised to the court's instruction at 2963?
No.
It just said you have to find that, that Mr. Novak claims that there was a substantial special use and no definition or anything.
Correct. But nor was the judge asked to give it by either party. When you look at the proposed instructions by both parties, it was never asked to be defined, and it was discussed extensively by counsel. In fact, the defense counsel pointed out to the jury that said, plaintiff's burden, and this is on page 16 of our brief.
I've read that. Okay. You don't have to read that.
But now, what about the defendant's supplemental jury instruction number 1 at A1191?
You're talking about, plaintiff's, which one?
Defendant's supplemental jury instruction number 1. Generally, a business owner owes a duty to...
Right.
All right.
There's no, they never requested a definition there. As you'll see, they never do. All they say is substantial special use and possess substantial control over the property adjacent to the premises.
But they did ask for instructions that said that the plaintiff had to prove a substantial special use. Right?
Well, and we agreed with that. We never disputed that. And the judge gave that instruction. They say the judge...
Not exactly. The judge's instruction sort of describes your theory of the case. Right? It doesn't actually... Maybe it could be interpreted that way, but it doesn't actually say that, right?
Because the Z Club put that area to a special, substantial special use. He's
But you got to read the beginning of the sentence.
I know, but he's talking about our burden.
Well, it says specifically Mr. Novak claims.
Correct. Correct.
In other words, it describes Novak's theory. Right?
And it says, well, that they specifically claims that the defendants did not properly monitor the exit of the Z Club and the alley beyond the exit, which is property not owned by the Z Club, because the Z Club put that area to a substantial special use. That's an instruction on and then it goes on immediately after that.
That's an instruction on what? Substantial special use?
Well, it consistent with what the parties asked for. It's not as if the parties, for all intents and purposes, it's virtually identical what the defense asked for. They didn't ask for a definition.
No, it's not identical, because at least the defendant says that a business owner owes a duty to protect its patrons from foreseeable dangers only on premises they own, not in public thoroughfares. In order to find the defendants owed a duty to protect plaintiff in the public alleyway, plaintiff must prove the defendants used the public way for their own private, substantial special use and possessed or exercised substantial control over the property adjacent to his premises. Now, that's a lot longer than substantial special use.
I agree, Your Honor, but the judge gave that first portion of that instruction all the way up to the substantial special use. He gave it in another instruction. Okay, so that's given in other parts of the instruction. And what I was pointing to a minute ago is immediately after the portion that we just talked about, where it says, because the Z Club put that area to a substantial special use, Judge Kennedy then went on to define our burden of proof in the case. But he did give the instruction about a business owner's duty. So it's all there. And Mr. Parler pointed it out to the jury in argument, as we've just talked about. And he said, plaintiff's burden in this case, and you'll see it on page 6 of the jury instructions under Roman numeral 2, is to demonstrate that the Z Club put the I Street alley to a substantial special use. There was no confusion. This was a very sophisticated jury, 3 lawyers, an assistant United States attorney among them, and counsel argued that there were 8 different references in closing to substantial.
The last thing you just said, where is that again?
This is on, are you looking at our brief, Your Honor?
Well, unfortunately, I'm looking at A2951, where the actual instruction is. But
I'll
look at your brief. Where is your
okay? Brief? It's on page 16 of our brief.
And where on the in the joint appendix?
And it is. I'll give you that site. It's A29.
You're reading me the argument, right?
I'm reading brief, you this portion. Yeah, right here. I just read where.
That's Zy Club's counsel's argument, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I got it. Okay.
Correct. So my point is that the jury wasn't confused. A2935:14-17.
35.
Right. 2935, lines 14-17. My point in saying that is that there was no confusion on this jury's part, and in fact, the defense lawyer told them exactly where it is to demonstrate that the Z Club put the I Street alley to a substantial special use. And above that, we cite the portions where we discuss substantial special use.
Oh, wait, 2935 is not the judge's charge.
No, it's counsel. It's the
right.
Z Club's
all
counsel's
right. Well,
argument. Yes.
I'm trying to.
But I'm saying, all I'm saying is that
substantial special use is a term that, at least I think, a jury needs to be told by the judge what it means.
Well, the defendant didn't ask for that in this case, Your Honor. So, I mean, it's waived. Whether that's appropriate or not is a point, because the defendant didn't ask the judge to do that.
All right. Let me ask you about the instruction on 2965. And this is that intervening criminal act. It's 5.14, I think.
I think we addressed that in our brief.
I don't understand, and I guess the defendants haven't raised it because it helps them, but I don't understand how the jury was charged. If you find the defendants were negligent, but that the criminal acts of a third person also contributed, then you have to decide whether it was reasonably foreseeable. To get to the reasonable foreseeability, you have to assume that the defendants were negligent. And then the judge says, if under the circumstances a reasonably prudent person would have reasonably foreseen the third person's acts and protected against them, then the defendants are not liable for the plaintiff's injury.
This is right out of the standardized instructions. Both sides asked for it.
Are not liable?
It's...
In other words, in order to get to reasonable foreseeability, you've already answered the question, yes, the defendants were negligent, but something else happened, and I have to decide whether that was reasonably foreseeable. And if a reasonable person would have found it to be reasonably foreseeable, then the defendants are not liable.
Well, that might be a typo, Your Honor. They are liable. Yeah, that might be a typo. You're right. I agree, and then in context, that appears to be. That's
right. And I just have one more question about the instructions on 2967.
And I can't believe that I sat through that instruction and didn't object to it if it was read as
if this is written.
An accurate transcription.
2967, beginning line 18. Now, this comes at the tail end of this charge on assumption of the risk. But what concerns me is the jury is told, if you find that more than one party of this action was negligent, and so then you can't weigh the negligence. And there weren't two parties that were both negligent. There was one that was negligent, let's say, the defendants, and one that committed an intentional act. Well, they weren't defendants.
Correct. Well, they were arguing contrib. They were arguing assumption of risk. So, you know.
So this is tied to the assumption of risk.
I assume that, you know, that's what it's referencing.
I guess that's right.
What are all these defendants? So the Capital Management, the Menage Limited Partnership, the Z Inc., the Power Station Limited Partnership?
It was a bunch of, limited liability partnerships, some of whom owned the property, some managed it, some owned the premises, some owned the rent, owned the lease. It was, it was structured in that way. There was an operating company, there was a company that had the lease, there was a, I can't tell you right now, Your Honor, what they all did, but I can tell you that that's why there were a number of them, is because they all had different roles in there.
This club is closed now, right?
Correct. The only other point that I'll make is that and the court may be aware of this, the club actually sits in the middle of a block, smack dab in the middle. If you picture a block as a square, it's right in the middle. And we, in fact, showed the jury this on a satellite view with Google Earth, so they would understand that you can't get there without going through one of these two alleys. The club is between, the block is H and I on the horizontal grid, and 14 and 15 on the vertical grid. And it's right smack in the middle. If you drew two diagonal lines through it, where that cross met, where those lines meet, is exactly where the club is. It's a former stable built around the turn of the century. It was a stable, and it just sits in the middle there. And you have to come down one of those alleys to get there. And that was part of the substantial use. But the geography does become important to understand that and create their duty. I mean, this was not, this is an area where no one in this courtroom is going to walk down there at 12 o'clock at night, unless there's some measure of security provided. This is not like walking on I Street. It's not like walking on 14th Street. It's not like where cars are going by and there's passerby and everything else. It's a very dangerous area. And when you're inviting folks in, and the only way they can get there is either by helicopter or walking in one of those alleys, we had a very strong argument for substantial special use.
Any more questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Why don't you take a couple of minutes if you have something to respond to?
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to address, and I'm not trying to shift gears, Mr. Reagan did address issues that really aren't about substantial special use. They're really about heightened foreseeability, and I just want to clarify a few things. There was no testimony or evidence that any time before this incident there was any other crimes taking place in I Street Alley, You have to separate the alleys. You have to separate the alley from the bar area, the dance area, the entrance area. There was never any brawls or melees taking place either inside the club or outside the club at any time. There was never any injury suffered by any patron, either inside the club or outside the club, even approaching the severity of Mr. Novak's injuries. There was never any complaints to the Z Club that anyone felt threatened or scared in any of the alleys or inside the Z Club. So what you don't have here is any comparable crime, a comparable location, at the same time, same severity, same number of participants.
What was the address of the Z Club? But how did they list their address if they were?
The actual address of the club? Right. I believe it said Z Alley, because that's where the entrance door is.
Did it say 1400 14th Street or 1500?
I have to do this from memory. I thought that the address said an alley, said Z Alley, but I could be mistaken about that. But when dealing with heightened foreseeability, you have to look at the area and the injury, because the specific kind of crime has to be foreseeable to a heightened degree, not just crime in general. We know that from Potts, Clements, Bailey, DC v. Doe, Beretta. So the foreseeability has to be specific and precise.
Well, I think you may have lost that argument.
For instance, let me give you another example. At this trial, there is no evidence that any board came from any dumpster. There was no evidence of that whatsoever. That was a theory. There was no testimony, I took this board from the dumpster. And same with the statement by Mr. Sanders on a prior attack. There was no testimony that it was a customer, that it was an I Street alley, or that it was the Z Club's dumpster at all, or that anything taken was a board. So this is not a repeat crime. And there certainly wasn't a big melee like there was in this case. Thank you.
Thank